In this episode of Keep FM, we are joined, or should I say rejoined, by Mac Chaffin, who's an internal platform engineer who knows what it's like to build infrastructure that developers actually use. We talk about why teams that reject Kubernetes often end up rebuilding it, what it really means to design the right level of abstraction, and how failing to understand Kubernetes can lead to very expensive mistakes. We also get into the deeper challenges of knowledge transfer in our industry, and why mentorship might be the missing piece behind so many bad technical decisions. If you've ever had to justify using Kubernetes or tried simplifying it without breaking everything, this episode's for you. This episode of KubeFM is brought to you by LearnK8s. Since 2017, LearnK8s has provided in-person and online trainings to engineers all over the world, helping them level up their Kubernetes skills. Courses are instructor-led and are given in-person as well as online. Courses are given to groups and also to individuals, and students have access to the course materials for the rest of their lives. For more information, check out learnk8s.io. Now, let's get into the episode. Mac, welcome back to KubeFM. To get started, what are three emerging Kubernetes tools that you're keeping an eye on?
One is kind of new to me. It's called Cargo. It adds real continuous delivery features to Argo CD. So I think it's kind of cool. Another, I guess, is just anything that uses WebAssembly. I'm really looking into that space. And then I guess third, it would be anything that doesn't have a pushy sales team. Like, I think that, oddly enough, that'll make you stand out these days.
Okay. So you heard it from the source, you know, but keep that in mind. Don't have a pushy sales team. Make sure it's focused on providing value and helping folks out. Now, we know a fair amount about you already because we interviewed you on a previous episode. But for those of our listeners who maybe don't know you, can you just tell us really quickly, what do you do for work, Mac?
Yeah, so I work on an internal platform engineering team. So basically what that means is we build tools that make it easier for developers to deploy their applications, but also provision infrastructure. So like databases, S3 buckets and stuff like that. I also have a kind of a somewhat side specialization in security. So I'll do like SOC 2 compliance work as well. And I definitely recommend it to people to have some kind of specialization like that, because I think it makes me stand out in interviews. And also gives work a little bit more variety.
And how did you get into cloud native?
I guess the funny story is it's basically resume driven development. At my first job, my mentors at that job decided that we needed Kubernetes when we definitely didn't need it. But I'm really glad that they did, because it of course, kind of launched my whole career. If you don't have an employer that's as patient as that, I guess I just recommend, you know, standing up a K3S cluster and deploying some stuff in it and kind of kicking the tires that way.
All right. And if you could go back in time and share one career tip with your younger self, what would it be?
I think a challenge for me has been finding ways to sustainably learn on the job. The field moves so quickly, so you have to find ways to learn. But early on, I would try to do that in my free time, which meant that you get no life. So don't do that. But then the other extreme is like kind of that resume-driven development of like picking a bunch of flashy tools that end up not working out. So I wouldn't recommend that either, because that's not sustainable. I'd recommend finding just a few new pieces of technology that actually solve legitimate problems, and then find ways to sell that to your company. Because that is its own skill set as well. That's really important. And if you can do that, then you can get that good sustainable balance of working on new tools, learning in a sustainable way that you don't burn out on and stuff.
Now, as part of our monthly content discovery, we found an article that you wrote titled, "Dear Friend, You Have Built a Kubernetes." So Mac, tell us what this post is all about.
Yeah, so it's basically a fake letter addressed to someone who's just trying to deploy a simple application. And in the process, they're kind of stubbornly refusing to use Kubernetes. But in the process, they end up kind of rebuilding Kubernetes piece by piece, because I think the reality is that Kubernetes solves a bunch of legitimate problems. And yeah, I didn't come up with the format. The original was called Dear Sir, You Built a Compiler, which has the kind of same vibe, someone trying to avoid building a compiler, but they build one anyway. And yeah, I just kind of loved the overly formal and kind of smug writing style, which is, I think, good for an internet that likes to click on things that make them angry.
Now, what was the community's reaction to your post? What kind of feedback did you get?
Yeah, so it kind of started a trend. There was at least one other person who did a dear sir, or dear friend article. Because the internet loves a good copy pasta trend. Yeah, unfortunately, I think that a lot of people, I feel like, didn't take away what I wanted them to. There was a lot of people defending the fact that they chose something simpler than Kubernetes, and they'd say like, oh, we just use EC2 or something like that. But then they would kind of neglect to mention all the dozen other supporting tools that they use in order to just use EC2.
Your article captures how developers reject Kubernetes only to recreate it piece by piece. What psychological factors do you think drive this initial rejection of established complex tools?
Yeah, so I think that the psychological factor for us, like stubborn know-it-all tech workers, is kind of the trap of overconfidence. Because yeah, I think that a lot of people underestimate how difficult it is to run a modern application. And it's really not easy, but it's also not easy to know that it's not easy. And so that's how you get into that trap of overconfidence. Because yeah, like the designers of Kubernetes didn't set out to build some overcomplicated piece of software. It grew organically, and like there's a lot of hard-won knowledge baked into the code base. And I think it would be unwise of us to just totally reject it.
After rejecting Kubernetes, teams often start with shell scripts that gradually grow more complex. At what point in this evolution do you think the scales tip and teams should reconsider adopting the tool they initially rejected?
Yeah, I think you won't like this answer, but I think it depends. The tipping point depends. But I think it's easy to tell where the tipping point is if you really understand Kubernetes and the niche that it fills and stuff. Because I like to think of the people, like there are people out there who have chosen like explicitly some non-Kubernetes option for running their applications. And I don't think those people are like worrying every day, like, oh, did I choose the wrong thing? Should I adopt Kubernetes? I don't think that they're doing that because they actually understand Kubernetes and they understand their application and they don't see a need to change. But yeah, if you don't actually understand Kubernetes, then I think that that's kind of a risk. Like you may end up needing some of the tools that Kubernetes provides, like auto-scaling or service discovery or failover and all those other things. And you would only encounter that at the worst possible time, like Black Friday for an e-commerce company. That'd be a bad time to realize that you shouldn't have rejected all that stuff that you thought was overly complex.
Right when traffic is peaking and your site is, you know, crashing because of so many people trying to buy something, say, hey, we should have moved, you know, off a different kind of infrastructure and really getting Kubernetes in there. And that's a good point. So at least understand the trade-offs of why you're deciding something and why Kubernetes might not be necessary rather than just straight up rejection. But this pattern of rejection followed by reinvention seems to repeat across our industry in different domains, whether it's with compilers, orchestration tools, databases. What does this cycle reveal about how knowledge transfers or fails to transfer in software engineering?
Yeah, to me, I think it's a mentorship problem. Like, I think that in our industry, we struggle. We don't have like proper apprenticeship programs like other industries. And so what that means is that if you don't have a mentor and you look at something like Kubernetes, then yeah, you're going to think that it is really overcomplicated and that you could build something simpler. But that... And that's actually a great learning tool because like in my databases class in college, we re-implemented a database. But that really only works if you have a mentor who can guide you through all the proper steps and then you can do it in a semester. But if you don't have that and you're like working for a company and you think you can reinvent Kubernetes without fully understanding it or having a mentor, then you're probably going to make a lot of very expensive mistakes.
Well put. Your article suggests that scaling to multiple servers is a key inflection point. With today's cloud providers offering increasingly powerful single machines, couldn't teams simply scale vertically on one large box rather than dealing with distributed systems complexity?
Yeah, this may come as a surprise, but I'm actually a big proponent of the one big box infrastructure. Like, I think you can get really far with it, and it does simplify things a lot. But there's still one question left when you use one big box, and that's how do you solve failover? Like high availability. And the way Kubernetes solves that is just with distributed computing. And so you don't need to use distributed computing. But my point in all this is that understanding Kubernetes means understanding the problems that it solves. And then you can insert your own solutions to them, whether that's VRP or some other failover mechanism. But on the subject of single node Kubernetes or single node infrastructures, like I think that a lot of companies are starting to realize that Kubernetes solves so many other problems that are inherent to running applications, not just failover, that they're starting to run like on-premise products that run in a single node. They're starting to run those in Kubernetes too, like my company's doing that. And I think that just kind of it just makes sense to use Kubernetes in that case, because Kubernetes is kind of an operating system for running applications. And it just solves a lot of problems that you'd have to solve with other tools like shell scripts.
One critical aspect that your article touches on is security concerns when mounting Docker sockets. What other security implications do you see when teams build these DIY orchestration systems?
I think that the biggest like security concern is just kind of ignoring security altogether. Both Kubernetes and security are fields that are deeper than they seem. Like, it's hard to know what you don't know about either Kubernetes or security. You can't just stumble your way into building a secure orchestration system. If you set out to do that without that deep knowledge of security or Kubernetes, I think you're likely to make a lot of mistakes and not even realize it, which is really dangerous. But yeah, I wouldn't say Kubernetes is like the most secure thing in the world. Like, it doesn't solve all security problems. Like, I think at least OpenShift does a better job about that. But if you read through some of the Kubernetes enhancement proposals, like, there's a lot of like security experts baking a lot of their expertise into all the features that come out in Kubernetes. And so, yeah, I just think it'd be silly to ignore all that.
Many developers wish for a Kubernetes light, something with core features but less complexity. Based on your observations of what teams actually need, is such a simplified orchestration tool viable or valuable?
Yeah, I think so. And I have a lot of respect for like the Podman team and what they're doing with Quadlet, because if you read through those docs, it definitely reads as a group that actually understands Kubernetes and is setting out to build something simpler. And yeah, so I think that's inevitable. Like, Kubernetes will be replaced by something simpler. And I welcome that. I mean, it'd make my job easier. I just don't think that you're going to be able to do that if you don't first understand Kubernetes and the problem that solves. You have to do that first.
For teams who recognize they need Kubernetes but want to avoid overwhelming their developers, what advice would you give about building internal platforms that abstract the right level of complexity?
Yeah, I like this question because this is exactly what my job is trying to find that right level of abstraction. And I've kind of got a hot take on the subject, which is that I don't think we should hide cover the Kubernetes API with any additional layers of abstraction, because I think that you kind of end up reinventing the Kubernetes API. Like, basically, like, if you think of Docker Compose, like, they also have a lot of the same concepts like help checks and security context and all that stuff, but it's just kind of in a more condensed format and it's not as featureful. And so, yeah, I think that you should expose the Kubernetes API to developers. The challenge, though, comes with the fact that you have to still build a lot of guardrails around that. You would need like templates because it is a lot of boilerplate. You need CI checks. You need like linters. You need policy engines to enforce things like, yes, you need a health check. Yes, you need to set resources. Maybe don't set CPU limits, things like that. And that's kind of the real work of the platform team, is building those guardrails.
And for teams who recognize they need Kubernetes, beyond technical implementation, platform adoption requires cultural change. How should platform teams approach the human and organizational aspects of moving to Kubernetes-based platforms?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. But I think the key to doing that is empathy. Because I think that if a lack of empathy leads to development teams thinking that infrastructure work is easy, and then they're resistant to adopting platforms because they're like, well, that's not necessary. But empathy is a two-way street. Platform teams often think that development teams have it really easy and will sometimes look down on developers rather than say, oh, you should just learn Kubernetes or something like that, rather than building the tools or the documentation needed to get them to that level. So yeah, I think platform teams should set a good example. So by empathizing with developers, responding to their feedback. But I think it's also necessary to set clear boundaries around things like ownership and deprecation cycles, because that all goes hand in hand with empathy too. This lack of empathy, I think, extends to other departments like IT and finance and sales. I think like every department needs to learn to respect the work of every other department. Otherwise, you'll keep getting situations like in this article where people only learn to respect each other after being told, "I told you so." And I don't think that'll get us really far.
Much agreed. Mac, what's next for you?
I got to go back to work. I think it would be funny to say that I have another blog post planned, but I can't imagine having something interesting to say more than once every few months.
All right, good. And just a topic that I want to touch on since it came up, towards the beginning, you mentioned the point about knowledge transfers and mentoring. In your experience, how was that like, in terms of, upskilling, getting to the point where you're at right now? And is there anything that you've seen that works? Like you said, there's not necessarily a formalized process, but perhaps there are things that you have noticed that maybe have worked or things that you would like to see in the future. Anything that you'd like to comment on that?
Yeah, I think I'd like to see, and I guess this is a really big wish list item, is a complete rewriting of the tech industry to be similar to other fields that have proper like apprenticeship. Like I've worked at companies that are like all juniors, and I've worked at companies that are all seniors. And I think that you really need to have that mixture. And I feel like we've kind of lost sight of that. Because if you have the juniors and the seniors, then the seniors can mentor the juniors, and the seniors get something out of that, and the juniors get something out of that. And then in a couple of years, you have a team of really talented people. And that just seems like such a good deal. I am shocked that we don't do it. any kind of like formal mentorship process that's industry-wide would be great. I'll just add that to my Christmas list, I guess.
That's good. Well, you heard it here first, folks, but that's something that I'm going to keep my eyes open for in terms of organizations that approach this topic in such a way by matching people with different skill levels in order to, as you very rightly said, build a really, really good team. That being said, Mac, thank you once again for sharing your knowledge with our community, and look forward to interacting with you soon. Take care.